Thanks for calling Toyota. This is Jan.
I just adopted a new best friend, and I'm looking for a Toyota so we can make the most out of summer.
With a new RAV4, you can take your pup for a drive up the coast. You can take a Prius to the park, or you can take a Tundra to kayak at a remote lake.
One problem, Jan.
Oh?
My new best friend's a cat.
Your summer starts here, but it all ends June 3rd. Toyota, let's go places. Dealer inventory may vary. See your participating Toyota dealer for details.
Visit your Front Range Toyota stores today. Toyota, let's go places.
This episode is brought to you by Visit Williamsburg. In Williamsburg, Virginia, there's never too much of a good thing. Whether you're a foodie, a golfer, a history buff, a shopaholic, an outdoor enthusiast, or a thrill seeker, you'll find what you came for here and more. So ask yourself, what is it you want? Discover Williamsburg and plan your trip at visitwilliamsburg.com.
We've got to tell you about the latest in relief and recovery creams from Escape Artist. It's the highest awarded topical brand in Colorado that's prioritized quality and consistency. Escape Artist produces these creams that can help penetrate for deep muscle tissue discomfort that's fast absorbing, plus they're not greasy and they're not going to stain your clothes or sheets. Best part is you can find them at your local Lightshade dispensary. There's 10 in the Denver metro area, and Lightshade has a premium selection of cannabis concentrates, top shelf flower, edibles, tinctures, accessories, and more. And now, podcast listeners can get 25% off non-sale items with code DNVR. So shop online at lightshade.com for pickup or visit a Lightshade location near you. That's your first pitch. Now let's play ball. Welcome into the DNVR Rockies podcast, brought to you by Strava Craft Coffee. Strava CBD coffee will improve the quality of your morning and afternoon, since it's rich in CBD and CBG. I say afternoon because I'm typically having 3 or 4 cups a day, which is something that I can do with Strava Craft Coffee, since it doesn't give you those jitters. It also makes me feel better with reducing my chronic headaches, joint pains, so much more than that. And now, on your first purchase, when you go to StravaCraftCoffee.com, you can get 25% off that first purchase with code DNVR25. I'm your host, Patrick Lyons, and joining me today on the podcast to discuss all things about baseball card collecting, which, if you didn't know, is having quite the renaissance for some of you out there, and that's been my story. Is I took a good 20-year break from the big boom that happened again in the late 90s, early 2000s, and now it's back and bigger than ever, and we're going to get the lowdown on all of it. We've got Jason Keen here, the owner of Grand Slam Sports Cards and Comics in Loveland. And Jason, it's a pleasure to have you on the DNVR Rockies podcast today.
Yeah, hello, Patrick. Glad to be here. I like to talk about stuff, and yeah, definitely like to talk about the industry. So yeah, it's been an extraordinary time.
I've been keeping my eye on you even before I was with DNVR. I can remember probably 5 years ago where I wasn't getting back into card collecting, but I was curious what's going on with the hobby. There was a card show up at the Budweiser Event Center. I think I came by your store on National Baseball Card Day where you gave me and my wife a free pack of cards, and I thought that was really cool.
That sounds like something we would be doing. Yeah.
Yeah. So, you know, before we even get into how nowadays, you might be able to go into Target, buy a pack of cards and have $100, $200 card in there, if not more. And we'll get into all of that in a bit. But before we touch on that, baseball card collecting, we all have our origin story, probably from when we were kids. But specifically, wanted to get a feel for, you know, how does one get to eventually owning a card shop, but how does one even begin in the hobby of baseball and sports card collecting in general?
In general, I'd say a lot of it's family oriented. You know, my experience is I grew up in a single parent family. So I have a mom and then my brother, who's a little bit older than me. I kind of followed, I didn't have a dad growing up. So Kevin was my brother, my older brother. So he's kind of my father figure. So I kind of looked after what he did. You know, he was getting into collectibles and hobbies. You know, he was into comic books to start, and then he got into cards. So I kind of distinctly remember we made a trip out to Indiana. That's where I'm from. I distinctly remember buying 1987 Topps at the corner store when I was a kid, you know, and ripping that. And yeah, no, I mean, it's a classic set.
That's my favorite.
In my age bracket, it's probably that's our 1975 Topps. That's our 1968 Topps. That's our 1952 Topps. You know, like there's there's the iconic sets from each decade. I think 87 is kind of like the iconic one for us. So, but I distinctly remember buying those packs. They're green. They had the white baseball on the front. And I remember opening those and just thinking they were really cool, getting the gum, chewing the gum. Even back then, it was pretty bad. But so that's kind of where I started opening stuff. And then I kind of remember I didn't know who I wanted to collect at all, like, because I was too young. So obviously, I am from Colorado. I've spent most of my life here. So, you know, we have a weird experience. We're just like, we didn't have a baseball team growing up. Like, we didn't have the Rockies yet. So most of us who are baseball fans during the pre-Rockies era, we're all transplants. So, like, we all have to be fans of other things. But growing up here, I didn't have a team to be a fan of because Indiana doesn't have a baseball team either. So, yeah, it's kind of weird. Like, what am I going to collect? What do I want to do? So I didn't really have, like, a specific thing or player that I got into, but eventually I chose Wade Boggs to be my guy. This card, I actually brought it here. Boom. 1989 Tops. Wade Boggs. I found this in a pile of stuff. I asked my brother, is this guy any good? And he was like, here's how you know someone's good. Look at the stats. Does he bat over 300? Now, I can't really show you this card here, but not only does Wade Boggs bat over 300, but he batted over 350 basically nearly every one of these seasons. I mean, he's one of the greatest pure hitters the game has ever had.
I love that you mentioned that too, because that's something that maybe newer fans have heard before on broadcasts or, you know, radio shows, the back of the card statistics. And they probably thought, what does that mean? But you're right. That was the only place. This is, again, predates the Rockies, predates the internet. So the only place you really could get, especially if you were a kid, you know, maybe if you've got, you know, the Macmillan Encyclopedia, if you got the Big Mac, if you've got those kind of books, you can go back and look. But from year to year, you didn't necessarily have a place that you could find those statistics. The backs of baseball cards were where you get that.
Yeah, like we didn't have an almanac. Why would we do that? You know, like, and the almanac was way more than buying packs of cards. You know, it's packs of gum once again. So, but yeah, so that's kind of how I learned, because I couldn't watch. I chose Wade Boggs. He had a weird name, and apparently the guy could hit. It's not like we get Red Sox games out here in Colorado. It was very rare. Like, you got to see them, it'd have to be on their national TV broadcast or anything like that, because obviously out here it's
Cubs and Atlanta.
Cubs and Braves. Yeah, and I didn't really, you know, I didn't like either of those teams as much, mostly because my friend down the street was a Ryan Sandberg guy, so he's a Cubs fan, and so I was like, well, I don't want to like the Cubs. I want to like a different team. So anyways.
I do have to ask. I'm wondering if what also went into the Wade Boggs fandom, and maybe you'll remember this, maybe this will dig up a memory. Did the Simpsons homer at the bat have anything to do with it?
No, it was my decision was just kind of based on his name, and my brother told me he was a good hitter. And so I kind of just started following him. Now, you know, and then what helps after that is then he goes to the Yankees.
Yeah.
And this, I'm 13 at this point, obviously I'm a little older then, but when he goes to the Yankees, my brother's a Yankees fan. So that kind of helped too. So when he signed with the Yankees, both of us were kind of on the same page then. Cause I didn't really care about the Yankees until Wade Boggs went there. And then when he went there, I got really excited. Cause I'm like, oh, this is, you know, he's on my brother's favorite team and I can like my guy. And yeah, I remember taking Al Michaels, it was Al Michaels Computer Baseball. I don't know if you remember this game, but
it vaguely sounds familiar.
It was a DOS computer game, baseball game, really, really clunky. But what you could do is you could custom make your team. It was really early. This is like 93, 94.
Wow.
You could custom make your team. So I would like go into the baseball newspapers and look at the lineups, and I'd plug in all the names. So that's how I learned about Paul O'Neill, Danny Tartabal, Wade Boggs,
Mariana Duncan, team. Mike Mariana Stanley. Duncan.
Yeah, you had like the early guys. And so you plug all these dudes into your team, and it was hilarious. You know, you're just like, it's obviously like it's watching pixels try to hit baseballs. But anyways, so yeah, that's, you know, it just kind of started from there, you know, and just trying to follow a guy. It was kind of fun. And I just chose a guy. This is the guy I liked. And it was very innocent. And not to mention, you know, I am a Rockies fan too, but you know, at the time, you know, that was like, well, this is my guy. I'm going to watch the Rockies because that's who I can watch. So
what happens in the mid to late 90s? So as you talk about that middle era of the 80s and early 90s, they call it junk wax because those cards are were just so overproduced. Everybody had them, right? So they're not rare and they just become less desirable. There's also a lot of new cards that are coming out continuously, and it becomes a little disenfranchising to continue to collect cards in the mid to late 90s, I think, for a lot of fans. Were you able to stick in there with the hobby during that period?
While this is happening, my brother's, you know, he meets up with a guy named Fred. And my brother, he was a football player, and he basically had to drop out of school. He had injuries and he just got into the hobby. He made that his job. So this is around 91, 92. And he worked at multiple card shops. In 1992, he met a guy named Fred that was over here in Loveland, and he owned Grand Slam. It was down on 4th Street. And this is all relevant to what I'm talking about, the junk wax. I want to put some things into perspective. I also missed that first question you were asking me about. How do we get into this?
I also see a dream coming true here. If you're heading down the road that I think you are, this is an amazing story. Continue, please.
Yeah. So this is around 1992. So my brother meets up with Fred. Fred has Grand Slam, and it's a video game and card shop. And Kevin gets in there, and Kevin knows a lot about cards because he's already been – he's 17, 18 years old. He's actually a middleman in the whole area. So he's been, like, dealing cards this whole time. And once again, like, this 91, 92 period, this is the height of the junk wax era that, you know, you're talking about. And so we'll kind of explain what's going on with that. But during that time, like, that's when Grand Slam is born, is out of the, you know, it's literally, I kind of say the afterbirth. It's kind of the end of the junk wax arc, because 92 is kind of what we consider the end of the junk wax era. Now, I mean, because you say mid to late 90s, and that's kind of a misnomer. It's usually 88 to 92, so it's a five-year period where it's absolutely toxic. So that period is like the biggest boom we had ever seen in sports cards. What that was all about, it was just basically people were seeing cards going for record sales in the late 80s and early 90s. The most notable one is the T206, Onis Wagner card. Obviously, that was the one that broke all the news headlines. You know, Wayne Gretzky bought a copy of the card, and it just became a super big deal. Yeah, boom. I believe that is it, too. I'm not sure if that's the miscut one or not, but I've seen that card before. That card actually went on tour. Walmart acquired it for a time, and they took it around the country. So even my local Walmart had that card. They put it in like a black velvet case and you could see it. So it's one of the most iconic cards ever. But this is during that junk wax era. Everything just boomed. You're paying 50 cents a pack. And I mean, what was your expectation to actually get a good, you know, how expensive a card should you be getting from that time? But we designate 92 as kind of the end of the line. And I understand like Upper Deck's in the middle of that. So like Upper Deck would be the first premium product that came out in 1989, denoted by the hologram on the back. Yeah, and that's obviously, you know, card number one of that set, one of the most popular cards of all time. The most important innovation on that card is on the back, though. There's a hologram, which was supposed to prevent counterfeiting.
That was amazing when that came out. That made it seem immediately like it was head and shoulders. Like, that was just classy. It went beyond. It was, you know, not PSA, and we'll get into all that, but you're right. It's interesting how a little hologram, little sticker essentially elevated card collecting, took it to a whole other level.
Well, and it was a dollar a pack too. Like, so to go from that, we went from 50 cents to a dollar a pack. And like, I'm 9 years old. Like, I can't spend a dollar a pack. That's outrageous. But you'd be able to buy a pack or two if you could.
And the pack is no longer made of wax in Upper Deck. Even in and of itself, like, so again, Upper Deck does this stuff where maybe it costs an extra penny to produce every card and pack more than Tops. Who knows? But you're right. They're charging twice as much. And if you're a collector, you go, well, this must be better. And you're right. Now we were starting to see the prices escalate from that era. But the mid to late 90s is when I think our generation maybe grew up. And so there was in the collection, and then there were still more companies coming out, or Upper Deck in particular was making 6, 7, 8 different variants where it wasn't just Upper Deck. That's it. There was all of these other iterations, and it really made it difficult to keep up the hobby. As you said, as a kid, that's a lot of money to invest.
You know, so around 1992, so the big thing that Upper Deck brought was the premium product. Like, we had premium prices. So that opens the door for Stadium Club and Leaf, all these different new products that are going to start coming out. And then, yeah, it's not just Topps anymore. It's like, here's Topps Stadium Club. Here's Topps Finest. I mean, that's a whole nother, but that's, there's a reason why we use 90, like 92 is kind of like that. That's the end of that era. Cause 1993, the game changes completely. So they come out with a set called Finest Baseball, 1993. It's the first chrome card. It is the first refractor card. And that is basically, if you know anything about sports cards, that's what dominates everything now, is if it's a plastic chrome type card with an interesting shine on it. That's literally like, that's what dominates our field now. So that year is like very important, because you can't, like, as a buyer who I've been open 29 years, but like, if people come in and try to sell us stuff, you know, I can't dismiss cards if they say it's from the mid to late 90s. Cause I'm like, well, what if they have Finest? What if they have, you know, there's sets they can have. Now, you would know you have Finest because Finest wasn't cheap. Like, it was $20 a pack. I mean, it's as outrageous then as it is compared to now. So, like, you know, you're looking at packs that are like, why am I paying $20 a pack for this? That was outrageous at the time. Just like today, people are paying, you know, $80 to $90 for a pack of some Prism sometimes. Even more. I mean, that's probably not even a realistic number anymore. But, yeah, like $100 or $120 for a pack of Prism. Not baseball, but football, basketball. But anyways, yeah, so yeah, that mid to late 90s, it's hard to keep up, you know, because the pricing just got crazy and there was a lot of variation. The other thing that happened is there was this baseball strike, which is it's probably one of the most significant pieces of history to the card industry. That's actually what really tapered off the interest in cards.
I had never thought of that. Wow, no, that's interesting. I had never thought of that and put those two things together, but you're right. That makes a lot of sense.
I remember it pretty distinctly because obviously, you know, we were all disappointed in 90. It's 94 was the strike.
94 and then 95, we had a delayed start. Yeah. So yeah. The 94-95 work stoppage, quote unquote.
So 94 is the strike in particular, and that was a very disappointing time. Especially for us, like, we were watching it. I mean, Frank Thomas and Matt Williams were going to hit 60 home runs. And you're coming off of, you know, just a couple seasons ago, Cecil Fielder hit 50 home runs for the first time in my lifetime. You know, nobody hit 50 home runs. You know, I think George Foster did it in like 77 or something like that.
He was the last one for the Big Red Machine. That's right.
So that was a huge time. Like, when that happened, it was like your mind was blown. Like, as a kid, you're just like, you can hit 50 home runs. That hadn't been done. You know, it's just not something you saw since Roger Maris, Mickey Mantle, Babe Ruth, those type of guys. So it was mind blowing. And here we are, like, middle of 94, going like, wow, Frank Thomas is going to annihilate the record. I mean, he was a monster that year. I mean, he was the best pure hitter, slugger, like the whole package. And they canceled the season. It was very, very disappointing. And so it upset a lot of people. It's really hard to like remember like how angry everybody was. Like, you can think about how angry people get about certain things. Like, if you think about how angry people get now about things, like, if you can imagine, like, people were so invested in baseball in 93 and 94, like, it just drove people out. So that was a big thing that turned us off. I would imagine as kids, there's a lot of disillusionment when you're around 13, 14 years old. And they, you know, the players are like, well, we want more money. And then you're just like, okay, you know, it's hard to like get behind it. So
especially if you're spending your money and you are not unknowingly chasing after some higher profile cards, but you know, they exist. And so like a kid, you're, you know, trying to buy that bar of chocolate, like you're Charlie, and you're hoping to get that golden ticket, and you spend your allowance money, whatever it may be. And you open up your pack and you know, you're not getting those cards that you want to get. But I'll tell you what, you aren't going to be disappointed when you come down to the DNVR bar in downtown Denver on the corner of Colfax and York, especially if you're a member, because you get a bigger beer with your membership. You know, we've got tailgates going on. The one against the Bengals on Sunday was great, at least before the game. There's one left against the Chiefs. Now, I know you're probably looking at their record for the Broncos. You're disappointed and you're thinking, all right, two games left in the season. They're 7-7. That's 14 games plus two more. No, there's 17 games this year in the NFL. Final game of the season on January 9th against the Chiefs. That'll be the final tailgate. So make sure you go and get your tickets for that at DNVR Locker. Relief.com. That's where you can go to get all the merchandise that you want. You know, you get all kinds of discounts. We got gift boxes as well that we're giving away where you get a bonus for giving away a gift, which you can't beat. 50 cents for your first month at thednvr.com, and an annual membership gets you a free shirt. We got a members only Discord. Some of you have got questions for Jason coming up. We'll get to those later on in the show, because you get first right of refusal, if you will, whenever we have a guest, to ask those guests those fun questions when you're a member to thednvr.com. We also have got a good discount for you when you use code DNVR on snoozesleep.com. It's the world's most universal mattress on the planet. It's called the Snooze Flip. It's designed to fit everybody. It's a 4-in-1 mattress, so you can choose soft, firm, cool, or cozy. Your body might need something different tomorrow than what it needs today, so be prepared with Snooze Mattress. Again, when you go to snoozesleep.com, use code DNVR for $250 off a mattress and $250 off an adjustable base with that code DNVR. Those of you at the tailgate, you loaded up on some of that delicious, sexy pizza. What is it? Well, it's a local community pizzeria that we have right here in Denver. They've been operating for 13 years. They've got hand-tossed deck oven pizza with made-from-scratch each morning dough. They do an amazing thing where they donate to various nonprofits right here in Colorado with their philanthropies. If you want to do some business with them and have them help you out, go to www.sexy.pizza. Check out their about page for the donations link to see how Sexy Pizza can support your cause. Stop by any of their 4 Denver locations in Capitol Hill, Old South Pearl, Jefferson Park, and Park Hill, with a new location coming soon in Trinidad, Colorado. Jason, I gotta hear, so you're talking about this card shop, originally a place for arcade games. So this place sounds even more amazing. This might be something you might have to bring back at some point in the future. But you own this place now. How does that transition happen to the place you go to as a kid? You end up owning Disney World. How does that end up going down for you?
So my brother is so he partners up with Fred in 1992, and he brings comic book knowledge. So that's kind of one of the big parts about the store is, you know, in the 90s, it was cool to do all sorts of collectibles. So sports cards, comic books, video games is what we started as. You know, it was pretty good for a time. What happened is we just started getting into fads. So like you would catch like a new fad that would come out. So one of them was like, Pugs were a big thing, you know. Yeah. So, and once again, this coincides with the strike. Like, this is 94, 95. So, the strike, sports cards are down. So, we had to get into a new thing. So, we got into Pogs, and that was a thing that they did. And then after Pogs, we got into Magic the Gathering.
Beanie Babies. Well, and, you might not have gotten into them, but
Beanie
that
Babies was
around
a
that
little
time.
Bit later. Yeah. So, you had this whole era of fads that would come up every year. And that was something you'd get into as a shop. So my brother he worked himself into a partnership with Fred. Now Fred was the owner, and he did that until about 1999. So he's getting into his, like, I don't want to say late 20s, he's mid 20s, and he's like, I'm not sure if I want to do this forever. He moves to Las Vegas. He finds love, moves to Las Vegas, and eventually sells the shop over to my brother. Around 2003, 2004, my brother finally gets full ownership of the shop. So he's just had it the whole time, and I'm off in college. I'm doing college, So that's the thing. Like, I am kind of out of the hobby at this time, just because I'm in college. I have different interests. I'm into like music theater and music, and I'm doing all my other stuff that I have interest in, and becoming a teacher. You know, even when I started teaching in the early 2000s, full time job, 50 hours, 60 hours a week. I'd still watch sports, but I couldn't keep up with what was going on.
You're grading papers on Sunday while you're watching the Broncos.
Yeah, and I can't hunt down. You know, like, I'd still follow baseball, statistics, or even, football bat. I'd follow all that stuff, but you just couldn't keep up. And that's how it was for a lot of us. I'd say a lot of people of my generation, we were kind of coming into our own during that time. So, like, we weren't – like, if we were keeping up with LeBron James, that was one thing. Like, maybe we were like, oh, I should probably buy LeBron James stuff, or maybe I should be – getting into Ovechkin or Sidney Crosby. Like, very few and far between people would do that, even though I knew those names were out there and they were going to be important and big. You know, even the Tom Brady, there was a Tom Brady craze in the early 2000s. It just wasn't as palpable as it is today, because we didn't know what he was going to do, even though he had won, early on in the 2000s, he put two under his belt pretty quick. So during that time, like, Kevin transitions, takes over the business. In 2007, 2008, my brother gets gout, and I happen to be my school that I worked at got bought off or sold off to the Poudre School District. And so I'm doing substitute teaching at the time, and I was helping at the shop every once in a while because I was trying to balance my teaching career and working with Kevin to help him out. But when Kevin got hurt, I had to basically take over the shop for 3 months straight. And once that happened, I was like, I think this is probably what I'm going to have to do, because if Kevin gets sick again, we're going to lose the shop. I kind of committed myself to the store, and what I told him, I was like, hey, if I'm going to do this, like, I'm young, I'm 26, 27. So I still have ambition and energy. Like, if we're going to do this, we need to open another shop, because me and you at the same place, it's just not going to be, we have all this information and knowledge, but we're just going to be bored doing it. Like, one of us can't be second fiddle. We both are pretty good at what we do. So we decided to open a second shop, and it took a while, but we got there in 2013. So we have Grand Slam Greeley as well, which is more of a comic book shop now. So, you know, so we go through these transitions. So 2013, we split them up. So I've been running that shop since 13. And then in the last 2 years, we decided to finally incorporate. It was a sole proprietorship. And then we decided to incorporate our business. So we are an LLC now. And then that's all under me. So I'm the owner of the LLC. So I've just kind of come into ownership of the store in the last 2 years. But
yeah, we even have some comments in the chat from Psychosius about, you know, Marvel cards and comics. The figures are really, it's all tied in with the pandemic. And we'll get to that big boom. That's just such an amazing story. As I kind of touched on before, you go to Disney World, and then you get to own Disney World. And so you're, imagine a kid in the candy store up at your shop, Grand Slam Sports Cards and Comics, 1730 West Eisenhower in Loveland. It's a really good spot. Got a lot of things on display. It's half baseball cards, half comics, and you can even order things, I think, for folks as well. Is that right?
Oh yeah. Yeah, as long as it's available. That's the trick these days.
Yeah. But the folks at Green Mountain Dental Group deserve to take some credit for those smiling Colorado sports fans around town, especially those of our DNVR listeners who've switched to Green Mountain Dental over the years to make them their permanent family dentist. They're the best damn family-owned dentist in the metro area, and they're extreme Colorado sports fans just like all of us. If you schedule a cleaning, x-ray, and exam, you'll receive a free Sonicare toothbrush from Green Mountain Dental Group, located only 15 minutes from downtown Denver. It is Christmas week here. It's coming up. It's on Saturday. And DraftKings Sportsbook, an official sports betting partner of the NBA, has a gift that'll certainly put you in the holiday spirit. New customers can bet just $5 on any NBA team to win, no matter the odds. And you win $150 in free bets if they are victorious. That's it. It's a great way to put some extra jingle in your pocket. All DraftKings Sportsbook customers can also get in the Christmas spirit with the holiday free bet surprise. Everyone gets a free bet up to $50 instantly as DraftKings gives away up to $10 million in prizes. DraftKings is safe, secure, and reliable. And best of all, you can deposit and withdraw your cash whenever you want. Download the DraftKings Sportsbook app now. Use promo code DNVR. Bet just $5 on any NBA team and win $150 in free bets if they're victorious. That's promo code DNVR this Christmas week at DraftKings Sportsbook, an official sports betting partner of the NBA. Must be 21 or older, Colorado only, new customers only. Restrictions apply. See DraftKings.com/sportsbook for details. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-522-4700. Your Colorado rugby team is back again, but now they're the American Raptors. If you haven't heard of the American Raptors, they're a group of top-notch athletes who've already competed at the highest level of various sports around the globe. Football, basketball, wrestling, soccer, even baseball and track and field. Our guy Colton Strickland has it all covered for you on the weekly DNVR Rugby podcast, so make sure you hit that subscribe button and learn about rugby, the Colton's 101 Rugby podcast with exclusive interviews with athletes and coaches. Plus, the DNVR Rugby podcast provides betting advice on the Super Rugby that is coming up in, well, a few weeks. It's February. It's right around the corner. It's not that far away. It starts right when football season finishes. So you can head over to AmericanRaptors.com to score some free tickets or to stream their games. All of that and more, again, on AmericanRaptors.com. Some of the questions we had for you here, Jason, in particular, is what product or maybe set. This comes from Dan in our Discord. What set has stood the test of time as you mentioned in our first segment talking, the T206 is just so iconic. But is there a set that seems to be that no matter, you know, what card you've got, it still has a lot of value, either sentimentally or financially?
I mean, that's a big question. And it also depends on like what sport we're sticking with, you know, like basketball, like the 86-87 Fleer set has been, it's been on fire. You know, that's a big set that's always been really highly sought after. So that's a set like kind of from the early junk wax era. So it's like before 88 when things got crazy, but there's still a lot of it printed. But obviously it has the Michael Jordan rookie card. It has a lot of guys' rookie cards in there. So that's a very highly sought after set. But once again, like I said, if there's a set that I think you want to track down, I think that 93 Finest for baseball, I think it's historic. I don't want to say it's undervalued. The refractors are like, they're tough. They're like, there's only 273 or, you know, some number. It's a very limited number of those refractors, and finding them, you know, is really tough. But I think in the grand scheme of things, it's probably one of the most significant sets ever. And then you'd go back to vintage, you know, obviously your 52 tops, the most iconic set from the baby boomer era. But, you know, you're talking Mickey Mantle's, you know, Mickey Mantle's 52 tops card is, you know, it's a couple bucks. So.
And here we are, you know, 70th anniversary was this year, is their 70th year tops producing it. And one of the interesting pieces that came out, I think right as the season was ending, was that Fanatics is going to be the sole licensor of cards for Major League Baseball. As someone who's on the inside of the industry, did that come as much of a shock as it did to maybe folks who hadn't been paying attention that Topps may ultimately be out of business for baseball cards and it'll be all Fanatics?
How to begin to answer this? So I think the people who are getting into the hobby right now, they're so intense into it and they expect answers and they want things right away. Because they're so intense, they're hoping for news every day that what exactly is going on. The thing is that my industry is not a quick industry. Like, it's not, this is an industry where things change immediately on a tail every day, which is something that we're not used to seeing. Like, it's turning into that more and more now just because of the amount of money, the amount of people that are involved in it. Normally, our industry is a very slow-moving industry, you know, especially baseball. Like, how long does it take to really understand, like, is this baseball player a good investment or not? It could take 5 years. Honestly, it could take 10 years. Like, you just don't know. Like, I can believe in a baseball player, just takes a long time. A lot of people are asking about the Fanatics thing, and I get it. Like, and I want to ask about it too, but when they say, hey, it's not until 2024, 2025, I'm like, oh, okay, we're just going to, you know, I'll be ready for it then. I don't have to make moves now today. You know, I don't have to start brown nosing Fanatics to like try to get in on that because it's, you know, it's either going to work out or it's not, or when everything's going to happen. The industry evolves, like things change that we can't predict. The greatest example of that I can tell you is literally what happened in the last 2 years. Like, I knew the business was growing. I knew the hobby was getting more popular, but I couldn't have told you that like a world pandemic was actually going to create excitement for the hobby as opposed to completely annihilate the hobby. So there's just things that are unpredictable that you can't plan around. So making a 4 to 5 year plan is pretty hard in this hobby, but things move slow and you just have to kind of react as you can. The Fanatics thing is definitely like, I'm of the opinion, like there's going to be time to wait and time to react to it. And I know nothing. Like, nobody's reached out to us. Like, if Fanatics, like everything I know about Fanatics is what I hear Josh Luber hops on a podcast and says something.
Yeah.
And then it's usually like, it's insane. Like, whatever he says, it just sounds like he's not, I don't think he's in touch yet. I have a hard time believing Fanatics is going to be able to move forward without acquiring Topps or Panini. That's my bottom line. So I believe that acquisition could still take place. And I just don't think you can do baseball cards without Topps. The history is too rich. If they jettison that, it's probably the biggest mistake they'll ever make.
I do hope you're right. And that's, you know, Topps do, you know, if you're listening to this on the DNVR Rockies podcast and you're watching it live on our YouTube channel, which you can do, if you happen to listen to the podcast, go back to our YouTube channel and search for DNVR Sports. We all love Topps, and that's what we think about when it comes to sports card collecting. I mean, even if maybe you collect basketball cards, you probably have to, you know, tip your cap to Topps and everything, you know, they were able to do. as the leaders in the industry. And so obviously it is a bit heartbreaking to see that happen, but Topps has a lot of other products and stuff that they put out. So it's not just baseball cards where they're going to be totally sunk. So maybe they just kind of say, hey, Topps, we'll let you take care of this branch at a lower price. Yeah, you're right. We don't really know what's going to happen. It's still so early in the going. You know, one thing you said was, and I really do want to unpack some of the change in the industry since the pandemic began, but you talked about that investment in players and how it takes some time for a player to get drafted just to make it to the majors. And even if they do it relatively quickly, are they going to be a future Hall of Famer? Because all the great cards that we're going to be looking at today, they're all Hall of Fame players. And so if they're in the Hall of Very Good, okay, that's nice. Their card's going to be worth something. But if they can go to the Hall of Fame, that takes them to another level. What kind of movements have you been seeing on cards from a guy that the Rockies just drafted last year in 2020, Zach Veen, or a guy who came in the compensation round in Drew Romo?
So Zach Veen, his numbers have been really good. People are really they're excited about him. I know they're saying he was the top prep prospect. Somehow we got him, and that's great. So I know there's been a lot of, like, his stuff's a little more expensive than you'd like to think. I didn't look at his minor league numbers in the second half of the season. I know the first half wasn't that good. So it did, Kyle. It's like, you could see his stuff wasn't just going crazy. So it was probably a good time to buy in that part of the season. I don't know where they're settling at right now. I don't know how he did in the second half of the season. I'm hoping he did better.
He did very well. Yeah, no, he did very well. It's very enticing.
Is this single A? Is this
low A? Yeah, he was with the Fresno Grizzlies with Drew Romo. Stayed there for the entirety of the year, and you know they went to the postseason. So yeah, overall, like you said, he had a lot of stolen bases. That was what he was becoming known for almost in the first half. And that doesn't move the needle very much as far as excitement, but he definitely found his power stroke.
Garrett Hampson was a stolen base guy too, you know, like, and that's what I remember his minor league numbers. That was a big thing of him.
So. And his rookie cards probably aren't, you know, terribly expensive.
I don't want to say Garrett Hampson's a complete bust, but you know, he's not an all-star. So Drew Romo, is he the catcher? I haven't heard too much about his stuff yet. But so I don't have a lot of insight on his cards right now. But
how soon after the draft are there cards made of the players? Is it literally just a month or two down the line, or is it even before that?
So what will happen is for the traditional cycle is going on right now. We're obviously a little delayed. So the first set that comes out that's going to feature the draft picks from that year's draft is called Bowman Draft. So it comes out in December. Usually early December. Hasn't come out yet this year. It's actually coming out in the next night. I think the 29th or something like that is when 2021 Bowman Draft is going to come out. So 2021 Bowman Draft is going to feature most of your players that were drafted from this most current draft from June.
Benny Montgomery, Jaden Hill, probably the two most popular ones.
And it won't have the biggest names. So like it'll have like your top pick. It'll usually have a number one pick. And then they're going to save the number two pick for next year's Bowman. So for 2022 Bowman, they'll be featured in there. So they kind of break it up. So there's a trilogy of Bowman sets that come out in a year. So it's Bowman, Bowman Chrome, and then you have Bowman Draft. And so Bowman's the one you collect to collect prospects. And there's all sorts of other Bowman sets. Like I'm leaving out a whole bunch of different ones that are just like not. They're higher end, but like what people want are their first signed Chrome card. Like that's the industry. Like that is the grail card of that player now. Is like I want their first signed autographed card. That's what, you know, that's the Mike Trout that sold for $4.5 million. Any of these guys that you can think of, you want to find that card for them. Now not every player has that card. Not every player has a Bowman, you know, autographed card, especially if you go back to the mid 2000s, they just kind of started doing autographs then. But there's some years, so like a guy like Jose Altuve, you know, boo hiss if you want to do that. But you know, Jose Altuve, he's on a Hall of Fame track. He doesn't have a Bowman autograph rookie card, but he has a Bowman prospect card. That's a good one to track down. So Bowman's kind of the king of that though. So like if Fanatics moves on to their thing, they're not going to have Bowman. Like they're going to have to do their own thing. They're going to have to. Who knows what they'll call it? They'll call it like Happy Shoe Fun Time. I don't know. Like I don't know what Fanatics does. They make T-shirts and they get signed memorabilia. So
and now they're gonna do baseball cards. Yeah,
it's, and they could do it. They could do whatever they want. Like we don't know. So
it is confusing.
But yeah. So whoever we drafted in the first round, hopefully will be in Bowman draft. I think the checklist is out already because they did a Bowman draft first print run that came out in November. They were going for $900 a box or something crazy. I mean, it's outrageous what they go for.
And there, so $900 a box. I imagine there's got to be close to 200 packs of cards. No, I'm kidding, of course. Let people know how
those
much
boxes are like. Yeah. Those boxes are like 50 packs. It was a weird exclusive product. What's going to be coming out? So Bowman Draft, when it comes out in the end of December, we'll have two variations. There's going to be the normal jumbo box, so that'll probably be 16 packs or 12 packs, and you'll get three autographs per box of those. And then the jumbo box, the super jumbo box, it's a weird big box. It comes with like five weird looking packs. It's all like on one, it comes on like one wax chain, but each one of them is like a huge pack, and you get five packs of that in there, and each pack has one autograph in there. So that's kind of like that's what people are looking for here. Usually in December for baseball, that's like what you collect, you know, Bowman draft.
So 900, I have to imagine, is towards the upper echelon. There might even be more expensive boxes than that. What is one of the more cheaper boxes for fans to get, maybe at your store or elsewhere, of a modern vintage, so to speak? Because you could go back and get 87 tops probably for $25-$30, but you're not going to really know anybody. You're not going to see any Rockies players. You might see Bud Black in a Kansas City Royals uniform when he was a pitcher. Right. But what's one of the cheaper, more affordable sets for people if they maybe just want to start getting into baseball card collecting?
Tops is still kind of the mainstay, like any kind of like right now, Topps Update is on the shelves. I love Topps Update. So Topps comes out in three configurations. You have Topps Series 1, Topps Series 2, and then Topps Series 3. Now Topps Series 3 is Update, excuse me. So Topps Series 1 and 2, they get condensed into a factory set. Those are the things you probably see all the time. You can find them at Walmart, Target. And those go for about $60. And that has every card, so it's going to be all the cards from Series 1 and Series 2. Those are mass-produced, so you can find those at Walmart and Target. However, Topps Update, while it is mass-produced, they don't do a sealed factory set of Topps Update. So whereas like Topps Series 1 and 2, they're overly produced because not only do you have a full run of like printing for Series 1 and Series 2, and then they make box sets of them, Update has no box set. So that's why Update has like a pedigree to it, that it's a good buy. Even in a year where like people are unsure of the players, I think it's always a good buy. So like right now, it's hard to put in perspective. Like 2018 Update was ridiculous. It was fire. You're talking the 18th millionth printing of Ohtani rookie cards, which people still pay a lot of money for. And then Ronald Acuna and my man Juan Soto, like both of there have rookie cards in that set.
Wow, those are some heavy hitters.
That's a loaded set, and so like those cards go for a lot of money. So this year in particular, even last year, people just weren't sure about the Update sets. I always recommend people to buy Update because it's not as widely produced. I mean, yeah, you can find it at Walmart, Target, like in packs, but you don't get a complete set. So there's scarcity. You still have to pull the players. But I'm a big fan of even if it's a class that like people just aren't sure about yet. But that's the beautiful part about baseball. Like you just don't know. Not everybody's Ronald Acuna and Juan Soto and is playing at the highest level. These guys are playing at the top echelon of baseball at the age of, you know, 20. Like we're just that doesn't happen. Juan Soto's like basically playing at the MVP level Joey Votto numbers, and he's 22. You know, so it's kind of hard to like. Yeah, I get it. He's like a once in a lifetime or once in a generation type player, but there's plenty of great baseball players that'll come out of a class like that. Most infamously is the 2011 Topps Update set. That's probably the number one guy was Mike Trout. And then you have Jose Altuve, Anthony Rizzo, Paul Goldschmidt, Chuck Nasty, DJ LeMahieu. I mean, that's a great class of cards. That's a great set. JD Martinez is in there too. So it's like, it's all these great rookie cards that I don't think all those guys are Hall of Famers, but all those, I'd say, I mean, Chuck and DJ are going to be fan favorites well into our, you know, golden years, I think. Like, we're always going to be like, oh, you remember that guy, Chuck Nasty? That guy was hilarious. Like, so I like Topps Update. You know, you can get them for like $100 a box, maybe less. If you do your hunting.
Yeah, that's not bad. I like that. And yeah, because there's going to be those rookie cards for players who debuted late in the season. They're going to be slipped in there. In a nutshell, let's see. Tell me how well I do with this. Pandemic starts coming down late January. Throughout the month of February, the world shuts down on Friday the 13th, March 13th of 2020. And people are at home. They've got nothing to do. They pull out their old baseball cards and say, hey, these look kind of interesting, and they start trading more and more, and people start seeing the values of these cards go up, and investors say, well, look, we got to throw our money into something. There's nothing going on. Let's get a couple Mickey Mantle rookie cards from 52 Tops or 51 Bowman, whatever it is. And then they become commodities for people to buy and sell and trade. And that becomes part of this boom. And I don't know about the baby boomers. They're a little bit older, but maybe there's some of them with their disposable income are getting back into it. You know, our generation, if you're in your 30s or 40s, whatever it is, you've got maybe a couple extra bucks if you don't have kids. And so you're getting back into the hobby again. And it just all takes off. How did I do? How did I do with kind of covering
where the
boom has come back from?
I think that's part of it. You know, is in 2016, I kind of was beginning to see. So when I took the business over, like in Loveland, so this is 2013, I realized I had a lot of sports cards and I realized how cool they were. And I was like, okay, I have a lot of these. I have to really start focusing on this. So I'm going to grow this market in my store. And I started doing breaks. I started doing trade nights, started talking about sports cards more with guys my age because they're having kids. And those kids are like, they want to play video games and stuff. But like during that time, you might remember, like there was a huge, like, we have to get kids away from video games. Like we're trying to, like, you know, we don't want to lose our kids to the internet. And so it's like, what kind of things can we do that are tangible, that are real world, and we can connect with children? So I would encourage people to play board games, which is another thing I sell at my store. But I would also encourage, you know, dads to connect with their children about sports, and sports cards is the way to do that. And they'd go, man, I really used to like sports cards. So they'd come in with their kids, and their kids would get into it. And then they would see how pricey and everything crazy was. And then the adults would start to get into it. Mm-hmm. So the wheels were there. Like we were on our way, like things were starting to move. And so it took a handful of years, and then just COVID was the fuel on the fire. And that's the way I can explain it, is like, I knew it was happening. I had made the moves. I was doing card shows in 2016 because I recognized these things that I'm like, I think there's people who want to do this again. I think we're moving there. And now here we're at, and it's insane right now. And I couldn't anticipate that. I thought my world was over. Like, I was like, well, cool. I'm going to have to move into a factory and start making something to combat COVID for the rest of my life. That's what I thought we were going to be doing. And instead it was like, or people just want to play with their cards. I knew something was up when, I want to say the 13th was like when things were getting really scary. And I think somebody was on quarantine. My store was still open. We were still kind of able to be doing stuff. But I remember this guy came in. He was like, yeah, I was home from the week and I was cleaning up my house and I found all this stuff. And he brings me like a bunch of like old G.I. Joe, Transformer, He-Man figures. And he was like willing to dump them. And I'm like, wow, okay. And that's when I kind of began to realize, like, there's going to be people doing this all year, because right. Or during this whole pandemic, this is like they haven't had the month and a half to sit around and clean their damn house, and they're going to find all sorts of collectibles, and either they're going to dump them or they're going to get excited about them. And that's kind of when I was like, well, maybe there's a chance here, or I'm going to benefit from this, and I'm going to pick these up right now and see if I can move on them. But once again, I was still panicking because I was like, am I going to have a store by the end of the year? Obviously, things turned out the way they turned out. But yeah, just that time at home, there was no sports to watch. So we were sports entertainment. Like if you were a breaker, like if you had a room where like you were opening product for people.
Explain to people who don't necessarily know what that is, because it sounds more intense than it actually is. You're not breaking anything. Yeah, you're not crushing anything. You're opening, but opening doesn't sound as exciting, right? You're opening a box and you're maybe setting some aside where, hey, these next three packs are going to be for someone else. And That's been another big craze too, right? On YouTube, people just opening up packs of cards and you see what they get.
Yeah, so sports breaks, group breaks is what we call them. What it is basically, you know, we all admit that the price of product is outrageously high. It was like that 3 or 4 years ago. There's product that's too much. And so, like, let's say you want a chance to be in a case of cards. In a case, is you're talking 12 boxes, not just like a box of cards. You're talking 12 to 16 to 20 boxes of cards. And usually when they make them, they're going to put like a case hit in one of these cases. A case hit is like every 12 boxes you get so-and-so card. That could be a one of one, a very scarce card, you know, very low serial numbered card, or even just an insert you only get once per case. So you have a better chance of being in on that case hit if you do a case break. So what you do is you go, well, let's find a group of people and let's break it up into teams is usually the most obvious one. So like for baseball, there's 30 teams. So we're going to do a 30 spot break. And what we're going to do is we're going to take the cost of the case and divide it into 30 spots. And then we can randomly shuffle up the teams and then someone gets so-and-so team. So it's kind of, once again, this is where the gambling, like, once again, there was no, remember back in, there was a month and a half, there was no sports on television.
That's right.
You couldn't gamble on anything except for, I think the famous story was, is people were gambling on like Russian ping pong or something
ping
like that.
Pong. I mean, ping pong was a big one. Yeah.
And that was the only sport going.
And so that box of Bowman, that you said before was $900. Well, now if you've got 30 people splitting it up, it's $30 and you go, all right, that's not so bad.
You can do a single box. Before, the idea before was it used to be a case though. Yeah. These days you have to do boxes because the cost of boxes are getting so high.
Yeah.
That's like a whole nother, like that's crazy to me, but that's the idea of a case break. It's a group break. All of you are opening something together. You're making it more affordable. And the cool part about it is there is like a social aspect to it. There's places you can go, like on eBay. It's also obviously very anonymous, but there's group breakers that have, like, especially on Facebook, they have a group and you can talk to each other and you can meet people. So there's a community sense to some of it too. Like when I ran breaks in my store, that was kind of the point, is I wanted to see the same people coming into my breaks, because then people would get to know each other. And most importantly, people would be like, oh, hey, this is the guy who likes the Astros. So let's, you know, I know I can trade my ass. If I get the Astros, I can trade it to him for whatever spot he gets. So you're hoping that like people are going to get the teams that they want. That's why I like team breaks, especially if I can pick my team, because like Rockies cards, really not worth a lot. So you can hop into breaks for the Rockies and get cool stuff that way. But yeah, it's kind of a fun way to open products when you're not just like opening packs randomly. And
our buddy Dan mentions in the chat, for I don't know how to answer this one. I haven't opened up too many baseball cards recently, so I know Jason's answer is going to be a lot better about it. Best personal pack he's ever opened. But over the summer during the pandemic, my dad and I, we were together. He bought a box of cards. It was, what was it? Heritage, Topps Heritage. And we opened those, and you know, there were a couple of inserts that I got that were cool. They looked flashy. They were taken off of the 1985 Topps, like that kind of model. So that was just, it was just nostalgic to just open them up and have my dad ask me like, hey, who is this guy? Like, oh no, he's actually pretty good. And then go through his packs and see what he's got. I imagine similar stuff you've done with your brother. Is there one recently or just all time of open up a pack and you got that card that you were looking for the entire time?
I could talk about more modern stuff, but the most important pack I've ever opened in my life was summer of 1992. So it was at Grand Slam when my brother was still working, you know, at the beginning of the store. I went there and I bought one pack of Series 1 or Series 2. I'm going to get this wrong. I'm going to get lambasted by somebody. I think it was Series 1.
We won't hold you to it.
Series 1 1990 Leaf. I opened a pack. And I got not only the Larry Walker 1990 Leaf rookie card, but I also got the Frank Thomas Leaf rookie card.
Wow.
I opened $100 cards. Like I opened $100 worth of cards from a $10 pack. Yeah. Now granted, Leaf was $10 in 1992. To put that in perspective, that is a dollar pack, but that's how important that set was. Once again, very similar to where we are today, where pack prices are so high. The Frank Thomas 1990 rookie card is one of the most iconic cards. And then there's also Larry Walker who, you know, very good baseball player. Now he's in the Hall of Fame. So it turned out, and, you know, he's obviously, we didn't know he was going to be a Rocky in 1992. No. Yeah, I know, it was awesome. So that's the pack that always sticks with me. I was that was the most awesome pack I've ever opened.
Chasing that high since then, huh?
I've opened one of ones. I've opened crazy stuff for myself because I don't open a ton for myself. To be perfectly honest, I obviously have a store. I see cool stuff all the time, but I do open some cool stuff. But yeah, I mean, nothing's gonna ever beat like that 12-year-old like, oh, Frank Thomas rookie. Like Frank Thomas was,
it's a big hurt.
Yeah. There's nobody bigger than Frank Thomas.
My confirmation name is Thomas, partially because of Frank Thomas. So no, you don't have to tell me. He was the man. All right, real quick here before we get out of here, some of the cards that blew up during the pandemic, they were already big, but in August of this past year, the T206 Honus Wagner, $6.6 million. That's a lot of money.
And that was the SGC3, I think, is the one that went for 6.6. I think this one's the Wayne Gretzky card.
In March of this year, a little bit more affordable. I think maybe we can get in a group together. This 1948 Leaf Jackie Robinson, $392,000. All right, not bad. It's the cost of a condo in Colorado. You could own that, or you could have a roof over your head.
I've actually had one of these, like just a raw copy of it.
But, a couple years later, after that came out, the iconic 1952 Topps Mickey Mantle, that sold recently for $5.2 million. 1989, we already saw it, the Ken Griffey Jr. card, which, again, that's in that junk wax era, so there were a lot that were made, but there was one sold for $23,000. I imagine it was a PSA 10, which is something we'll have to get into another day. You can grade the cards, because as we go back and look at the Honus Wagner, the corners are dinged up, which of course you expect that to be the case for a card over 100 years old. But what if you were to have one that was just sitting in a bank vault that was perfect and pristine and didn't have any fold marks and the coloration of it was perfect? Well, that would be worth even more than just a pretty decent card. So that's another wrinkle of the industry. And this last one too that I want to show, I don't know if it's one of one. You would know if it's one of one. Is the Mike Trout 2009. It's a Bowman card. Bowman Superfractor. Yeah. $3.9 million last August. What's going on here, Jason?
That's the Superfractor. This is the most expensive modern card, I want to say. I don't remember if a basketball card upended it this year, but
the Luka Doncic, I think, may have maybe jumped past it, right?
Yeah, I can't remember if it did or not, but this is the, at the time, it was the number one, you know, modern card. I mean, it's 2009. So, I mean, 12-year-old card at this point. Yeah, no, it's a huge card. You know, Mike Trout, often considered by best. There's people who think he's the best player that's ever played. That's a show for a different debate, different show. But I like Mike Trout, so, you know, it's not nothing against him. But yeah, this is Superfractor. So Superfractor is a term for it's called a one of one. There's only one copy of this card. Usually the Superfractor has like some weird shimmering effect. It can't be very hard to counterfeit. Very, very, very hard card to get. The infamous story behind this is the guy who bought it originally. He paid $400,000 for it in 2018. His name is Vegas Dave, and nobody likes him. He's a pretty awful guy. You can look him up on YouTube. He decided to spend a lot of money on Mike Trout, so he kind of did a pump. This was the dump, I think. I don't know if he got rid of everything. I don't know if he came off his position completely. Yeah, he moved this card. So, yeah, he did pretty good. $400,000 purchase. People were laughing at him at the time when they paid $400,000 for it. Then he sold it for $4.5 million after buyer's premium.
Wow.
Yeah, it's crazy. It's crazy to think it happened. But and I believe that card is publicly available, that we can all buy stock in that card of. I think the people who bought it, it's like a group sold card. So,
man, almost NFT like. All right, last piece for talking about baseball cards, error cards. I have what I consider to be the greatest error card, but here's a couple ones. A Barry Bonds card that depicts Johnny Ray from 1987 Donruss. So that's always funny when you have the wrong guy depicted. I imagine that doesn't happen quite as much nowadays. A Dale Murphy card, one of the original Colorado Rockies from 1989. It was the reverse negative. So you can see the A is backwards, and as well as the team nickname is backwards. And then my favorite era of all time. And hopefully we shouldn't get flagged on YouTube for this, but the card where the knob of the bat has writing on it. It's faint enough that I feel confident we're not going to get flagged and taken down. But if you don't know the story behind that one, you can either reach out to me on Twitter at Patrick D. Lyons or the main account at DNVR_Rockies. I imagine this one has a warm place in your heart. Do you own this card, Jason?
I have owned copies of this card. It's not a card I need in my life all the time. It's not a personal grail. The one that would be hard to get is the actual fixed card. So that card is the original card, and then there are fixed errors of that, like fixed versions of it, and there's actually variations on those. So that's where I would actually be interested in finding the. There's a white out one that's considered one of the most popular ones, but.
And there's a black one too. Card. There's a black.
Yeah, there's a black square. There's one with scribbles on it, so you can still see it on there. And then the white out one is like supposedly the one I've never seen a white out. So
that's the most expensive one. If you that's have a Billy Ripken,
that's the one that's harder to get. Yeah.
There you go. There you have it. So there are those, you know, little special exceptions within the junk wax era of special cards. So if you see a 1989 Fleer with a gray background, it's kind of ugly, but I love it because, again, that's what I opened when I was young. You could find that one with the white scribble. And you said there's a story on this. Well, this will be a good one to go out on.
Well, the 89, I was just going to say the 89 set itself is just famous because, one, it has a Ken Griffey Jr. rookie card. There's also a Randy Johnson card in there that's the Marlboro. It has a Marlboro ad in the back. So that was another one that they had to fix. So they had to fix the background of it. It's another famous error card. So yeah, it's two of your big, two of your big Hall of Fame rookie cards. And of course the Billy Ripken stuff, the 89 set, it's actually really interesting because this was a period where there was for years, it was just Topps, and then Fleer got into the game. So there was a monopoly. There was a lawsuit that allowed like Topps had the stranglehold on baseball cards for, you know, almost two decades, the '60s and seventies. Fleer gets the license back in 1981. And Donruss gets in on it too, but Fleer was always kind of like they didn't do gum; they did puzzle or they did stickers. That was their gimmick. Whereas Donruss is puzzles, and then you have Topps, which is gum. They all had to have a gimmick. They weren't selling sports cards; they were selling these other things. They were selling puzzles, stickers, and gum. That's the way you're supposed to look at it.
Sure, sure.
Nowadays, it is cards. But in 1989, like that set, that error was so notorious that it just put Fleer, like if you look at the next handful of years of Fleer, their product quality is lower. Like they're just not there. They came up with Fleer Ultra eventually, but
I like Fleer Ultra.
What it did is it allowed Fleer to like, they got bought out and picked up by somebody else because of that error card. It was a huge, like it was a huge industry snafu when that happened. And it was embarrassing. The owner he was disgraced because of the whole thing. I mean, it was a big deal that got in there. Because how do you miss that? Like, how do you miss that on the print sheet? You took the photo. It was a gag at the time when it happened because they gave them the bat and they took the photo because they knew it was photo day. And they thought, you know, the players are just laughing. They're, you know, because his brother, you know, Cal's an infamous prankster. You know, the hazing that happened back then, you know, I mean, you couldn't get away with it today. But, you know, rookie hazing was a thing. Anyways, and of course he's worse because it's his brother, right? But anyways, yeah. So
and for anyone who doesn't, I didn't actually say the words, but there's a curse, a four-letter curse word. It's an alliteration. So the second word is face, and you can imagine what the other F word was on top. And you're right. Yeah, this is a card that this is for kids, and you get it, and you go, wow, that's crazy. I gotta have that one.
And they
that
got is in a grail for me. They got in a lot of trouble. Like they got in a huge amount of trouble. So yeah, it changed part of the industry. That's how important that card is. But yeah, it's, you know, it's pretty sweet. So yeah. And you'll see people wearing t-shirts of it. Like that's like one of my favorite things. Like it's actually one of my favorite shirts. You'll have a person just come in and they'll just have it on a t-shirt. And I'm like,
I need that.
I'm like, that's cool. Like that's a cool shirt. So
I need that. Well, hey, I imagine you're going to be open all week leading up to Christmas, right?
Yeah. Yeah. So we're going to be here. We'll be here open every day. Christmas Eve, we'll be closing at 5:00, but otherwise we're usually noon to six. During the week right now. So
noon to six, you can call the shop at 970-667-8713, or just swing on by at 1730 West Eisenhower in Loveland. Colorado. It's Grand Slam Sports Cards and Comics. You got figurines and all kinds of action figures on display as well, in addition to comics. As you, I think you touched on it briefly, you've got tournaments going on for Magic the Gathering and a lot of different amazing events with board games. So it's really a one-stop nostalgic stop if you want to get back into things, or if you're already doing this kind of stuff. Well, then you need to make sure that you patronize Jason's building and throw a couple of shekels his way, because he's been crushing it for, you know, close to a decade or more officially here. And the shop in Greeley, which I didn't know about. I'm going to have to swing through there as well.
Yeah, the Greeley store is more of a comic shop. We do have cards there. You know, usually if there's something you're looking for, you can ask them. We can make it happen. I have people driving back and forth between Greeley and Loveland all the time.
Jason,
and,
thanks so much for having us on. Anything else you want to get out there too that we haven't covered?
Yeah, I'll just drop a little news that I'm going to be expanding our business here in Loveland. So we're buying another unit two doors down from us. And so what that's going to do for us is we're going to probably move all of our comics over there. And so that's going to really expand my sports card section and have more dedicated space for player group. But I think for the most, you know, for the relevant news, is I'm going to have more. I'm actually going to be able to display more of my sports cards for people, because people come in and they go, I have more sports cards than I have on the floor right now. And usually I have to be there till I go, well, let me go dig this up for you. So I'm going to have some more dedicated space to cards. So you'll be able to see some cooler cards when you come down. So hopefully that's happening in the next 2 months. We're really excited about that. That's how well business has gone, is it allowed me to expand or open a new business. So that's awesome. So
that is.
So thanks everybody who got into the hobby in the last year and a half. We're happy you're enjoying it. So.
Yeah. And thanks for everyone who listened to this. Again, reach out to us at @DNVR_Rockies on Twitter. I'm @PatrickDLyons on Twitter as well. You can email me Patrick@thednvr.com, and make sure you're checking out Grand Slam Sports Cards and Comics. Got a cool page over on Facebook too, to make sure you check that out. So for Jason Keene, I'm Patrick Lyons. Thanks for tuning in to the DNVR Rockies podcast.